Hey everybody, welcome again. I'm gonna do that again because I started real high. Hey everybody, welcome again to F This Movie, the official podcast of FThisMovie.com, movie love for movie lovers. My name is Patrick Bromley, and I'm super excited for this week's show because we are talking about Nightcrawler, the 2014 movie where Jake Gyllenhaal films dead bodies, and I am joined by the man, I was trying to think of
Take
like
your time.
no
Take your time.
it's the moment has passed. Lisan Al Gaib, is that what I'm trying to come up with?
Ah,
Rob DiCristino, hi Rob.
interesting. I am F this movie's messiah. I'm a
You
reluctant. I don't want to be until the third act requires that I want to be, and
you
then
are the
we'll.
Muad'Dib.
I am the Muad'Dib. I'm the Ma'Dai. I'm the Lisan Al Gaib. I am
Kwisatz
the Kwisatz
Haderach.
Haderach. And you are my weird little sister.
I'm happy to be your weird little sister, your weird little Alicia Witt.
Yep.
How you doing, Rob?
I'm good now that we're talking about Dune. You want to talk about Dune for a
We're
while?
gonna talk about Dune because that's one of my what have you seen latelys.
Oh, yeah.
Real quick up front, we've had some people message us on Twitter about this. We are currently not found on Spotify. Spotify seems to think we have violated some sort of third-party content rule, which we haven't because we don't use third-party content, but we are currently in the process of appealing and hoping to get back on Spotify. But if you listen to us on Spotify and suddenly we're not there, this is why. It's hopefully a temporary restriction and we'll be back very soon. They won't tell me what episode, what content, no idea what's going on. But
We all cancel our Spotify accounts?
let's just boycott Spotify until F
Okay.
This Movie is back and let them know that's why you're canceling, damn
That'll endear them to, endear us to them.
it.
Definitely.
Rob, have you seen anything good lately?
I've seen a bunch of stuff, Patrick.
Woohoo!
I took a little January break from movies because I'm sure like you, I was exhausted by movies after award season.
Oh man.
But I started getting back into it again, and we did an episode of Reserve Seating last week on Ghost Dog, Way of the Samurai, to close out Mike Month. And hashtag Mike Month. And I was reading a little bit and came across again references to Le Samurai, to the classic sort of French crime film, the classic sort of, which I'd never seen.
Oh, okay.
And so I put it on, and it was good. I enjoyed it. It was exactly what I thought it was going to be, kind of a vibey kind of noirish sort of, crime movie type thing. Totally good. Glad I saw it. No real new opinions on it. Thought it was well made, well acted, so on and so forth.
I was looking for a hot take on Melville.
I got no hot take on the 1967 French crime thriller Le Samurai, except that when people say Le Samurai was an influence on this movie and that movie, now I can go, yeah, no, I get it. I see it. Yeah, I definitely see it. Yeah, guy has a lot of keys and lives in an apartment with just a bed and a bird, like
Lives
me.
but lives by a code.
He lives by a code. He is not a ghost dog.
No.
He has a bird though. And a girlfriend and a car. And that's about
That's all you
it.
need. Yeah,
It was
that's all you
good.
need. Yeah.
Also, the movie that's been sitting, well, one of the movies that's been sitting on my entertainment center since like November, like screener season, was Wim Wenders' new film Perfect Days, which I finally watched. I don't know, Patrick, did you watch that one?
I have not yet.
It was one of the ones where there's every award season there's a movie that I just don't get to. There's a screener like that, like I should not. I mean, there's a lot of screeners I don't get to, but there's a there's a big movie, like a movie I should watch that I never get to. And this year it was Perfect Days. So I didn't see Perfect Days in time to vote for anything. I don't know necessarily that I would have really necessarily voted for it for anything. Except for just, it's a perfectly lovely movie, a well-made movie about a guy who walks around. And sometimes you just need to have a movie about a guy who walks around, especially if you're Wim Wenders and that's the most of the kind of movies that you make. The lead performance by Koji Yakusho, I know I'm mispronouncing his name and I apologize for that, is wonderful. It's a lovely little gentle quiet movie about a man who cleans toilets and has some revelations, and just it reminded me a lot of Akira, which again is my favorite Kurosawa film, kind of a lonely guy movie. And again, I'm really failing the whole insight thing because I don't have a ton to say about it that I haven't read in other places and smarter people have written about, but a really nice, quiet, well-observed movie that is totally, if it's on streaming somewhere and you can check it out, I would totally, it's a nice like Sunday afternoon kind of movie to have on and just check in with here and now. Again, it's
This
good.
is absolutely the wrong time to have been taken off Spotify because we're like 5 minutes into this show and we've name dropped Kurosawa,
Yeah.
Jean-Pierre Melville, Wim
And
Wenders.
then there's, we're like, we should rename this the Film Bros Podcast. We should rename this the.
Let's call it the Film Bros. Do you know what movie I didn't see that I'm supposed to have seen? The Zone of Interest.
Ooh,
I can't.
it's a bummer.
Yeah, that's the thing. I really like Jonathan Glazer, and
Yeah.
yet I can't bring myself to be in the mood to watch The Zone of Interest.
You're never going to be in the mood to watch. They weren't in the mood to make The Zone of Interest. Like that, like it's not a movie you get jazzed up for.
No.
It is good. It's well made, but yeah, I don't blame you, because I only watched it because I was watching it. It was like a screener crunch night where I was watching like three things in a row and I could like dull it with stuff on either side. But it's a bummer.
Yeah, I admire your dedication to the art of the screener because I might not get to Perfect Days. I might
Yeah,
not.
I've gotten better. I've gotten better. You told me when I first started getting screeners, you told me like, Rob, you don't have to watch all the screen, like you don't have to watch every single one. And I was like, no, I do. I have to. Now I've really like calmed down about it, and I'm like, I know. I get that neon box set, and I'm like, I know I'm not gonna watch half of you. I get, the stuff, and I'm like, I'm not. I know I'm not gonna get this. I can look at a screener and look at it and go, I know I will not watch you, and I'll put it on the shelf and it'll sit there for 6 months and then eventually I'll, get rid of it. But I did want to see Perfect Days because I do like Wim Wenders, and it's like I know I'm gonna get to it. I was just burnt out. I wasn't in the right headspace, but anyway, a perfectly lovely movie.
I'm incredibly deficient in my Wim Wenders viewing. I've maybe seen two of his movies.
Yeah, I mean, Paris, Texas is the only one I really go back to a lot. Because
Love it.
that's just some Rob bullshit up and down.
Love that
That's the
movie.
yeah, that's the only one that I really, really come back to a lot. I've seen, well, I mean, he did Wings of Desire, right?
I still haven't even seen Wings of Desire, but I've
Seen
seen
that.
City of Angels like four times.
Yeah. Again, I'd have to look at a list of his movies. But yeah, I haven't seen all of them either. But I just know he's one of those guys where I'm just like, I'll definitely watch it.
He's a guy where I'm like, I should see everything he's ever
Yes.
made.
Yeah.
But
And if
instead,
it's
I just
there,
watched City of Angels again.
I'll just watch The Samurai.
Yes.
Guy's got a big rack of keys. Let's see. Before we go all full Dune here, because I've got several preludes to Dune here. Okay. I watched Leave the World Behind. The
The Julia Roberts Netflix end
Julia
of the world
Roberts
thing.
Netflix thing. My students were telling me that it's great. And they're wrong. It's dog shit. It's some real glib don't look up bullshit. I'll tell you that much.
Okay.
Did you watch it or?
I have not watched Leave the World Behind.
Okay.
I saw Don't Look Up, and
Yeah. Yeah.
I don't invite any movie
No.
with comparisons to that.
It's not it's I think it's apocalypse movies for dummies. It's very arch. It's very like it's one of those things where it thinks it's being Get Out about things and it's not. It thinks it's a lot more clever than it is. It wants to dip its toes into like Mahershala Ali is in it, and he there's this whole arc with like race relations in a crisis and sort of not one percenters, but sort of the privilege that comes with certain things. And then in the way information is transmitted through social media, the way that governments function and can topple in the military industrial complex. And it wants to get into all these things, and it's just not interested enough or thoughtful enough about any one of those things to really be worth watching. It's also like I guess you could call it a drama. It's a dramedy, I would say. I mean, it's not explicitly comedic, but it's one of those things where it's shot like a cheap, shitty streaming comedy, and it's like 2 hours and 20 minutes long or something like
Ooh.
that. And it's just like, no, thank you. I did not, I thought it was incredibly, incredibly bad. I did not enjoy it.
I don't feel bad for having not watched it. At any point,
Nope.
does anybody like slam a jewelry box on Julia Roberts' hand?
No, and I think that if that had
Ooh.
happened,
Yeah.
I would have liked it better. I also today, I in fact, before we started recording a little while ago, I watched Spaceman, the Adam Sandler Netflix thing. Did you see that?
Another movie I may never get
You're
to.
fine. It's Netflix Solaris, basically.
Oh
It's
boy. I like Solaris, but
yeah.
by the way,
It's
the George Clooney one. I've never seen the
yeah.
Tarkovsky
I've seen both, and I prefer the Clooney one. So,
Okay.
but I'm a Sodi head, so I that makes sense to me. Yeah, I mean, like, I like sad Sandler, right? I mean, we all like, you know, for the most part, I like when Sandler is sad. Yeah, and but this one though, again, the best way to say it is Netflix Solaris. It's dealing with the same themes. It just in a way that's not nearly as mature or interesting. I almost don't want to spoil it for anybody who is unfamiliar with the premise. Paul Dano is the voice of a character, and he's fine. And Isabella Rossellini is in it. The movie's got an Isabella Rossellini to spare. Carey Mulligan, who I've dubbed the Michael Ironside of sad wives in movies, is just like playing the sad wife. And you're just like, of course, it's Carey Mulligan. She's playing the sad
Is she
wife.
playing the sad wife from Maestro?
She's playing the same sad wife.
Crazy voice and everything.
It's not bad, but again, it's like starter Ad Astra, you know what I mean? Like it's
Right,
like
right, right.
existential space drama for dummies. That's basically what it is.
How good is Ad Astra, by the way?
It's not my favorite.
Oh man, I keep coming back to it and I like it more every time.
Yeah, maybe I need to rewatch it. Okay,
Yeah.
so maybe I will rewatch it, but I because I like it fine, I think maybe I need to reapproach it, but again, by just the comparison I just made, I mean it's the smarter version, that's the more emotionally intelligent
Got it.
version of
Okay.
this.
Okay.
Yeah, for sure.
Is this still part of his, do we know, is this part of his Netflix deal? Does he
I don't
only make
know.
movies for
Does
Netflix
that deal
now?
keep getting extended? Does he
I
just
don't
keep
know.
signing extensions like MLB pitchers? Like is that what's happening
Maybe.
with
I
him?
don't know how baseball works, but he
See what
makes a
happens.
lot
So
of
there's
movies for
four
Netflix.
bases, run.
I could picture the four.
Right. One of them is shaped like home,
No.
and it's called home. No. All right. We'll
No.
figure it out
You
later.
lost me. Home
Yeah, I
is an
don't know,
abstract concept.
but but no, Sandler, like again, I'm very happy for Sandler. We've been talking for years about like Sandler saw it coming. Sandler saw the writing on the wall. He knew
Yeah.
exactly what to do with Netflix, and he's laughing all the way to the bank, and I
Yeah.
appreciate what he does. I liked Hustle. I thought that was a cool movie, like quiet little cool little basketball movie, right? He does interesting things. He's fine in it. It's very one note. But he's trying to do something. It's not good enough material for any of the people involved.
Okay. Was the last like true Sandler style comedy Hubie Halloween?
Oh, for sure.
Okay. Because
Speaking
he
of
hasn't done one of those in a
good
while. He did the
Sandler,
animated one where he's the lizard. He did You're So Not Invited to My Bat Mitzvah, which
which
is
you
kind of like
celebrate,
his,
I still have not watched.
it's good, his
Yeah.
preteen movie. He does Hustle, which is his kind of sports drama. Now he's doing Spaceman or whatever the fuck this movie's called. He's kind of gotten away from doing the Happy Madison kind of shit.
I imagine he gets back to it. He can't
Yeah.
go. I don't think he's going to go too long without it. But he plays a Czech cosmonaut, by the way. Bet you didn't see that shit coming.
No. No, I
It's
did
based on
not.
a Czech. It's based on a novel that's
Okay.
bohemian in nature. So
Okay.
anyway, it's totally harmless. It's totally fine. It's not interesting at all.
I will be watching City of Angels again.
Yes. And then to transition us into Dune.
Yeah.
I rewatched Jodorowsky's Dune.
Okay.
Because it's been a long, good long time since I've seen it. And boy, is that movie A Murderer's Row of canceled folks.
Oh, really?
The first two interviews are Richard Stanley and Devin Faraci.
Oh, shit.
You're just like, oh, shit.
Richard Stanley might have been uncanceled.
Was he uncanceled? Okay,
he might have been.
All right.
But I know he was canceled for a time, but I think that shit got dropped maybe, or I don't know. But
I don't know. Yeah. Speaking of canceled, Alejandro Jodorowsky would be mercilessly canceled because even just some of the things he says in this movie were hard to listen to. But I find Jodorowsky's, as somebody who obviously loves David Lynch, and Jodorowsky is deferential to Lynch in the movie, which is maybe my favorite part about it, which he says like Lynch is better than me and the movie he made was cut to shit by a producer, so I don't resent David Lynch for making Dune. I think Jodorowsky's Dune is like one of those, it's that thing where it's like, it's one of those sequels where you think you want it, you think you want a whack job to make Dune, but when you see it, you're not gonna like it. You're like, I'm not an El Topo fan. Like, I mean, God bless him. Like, you know, make whatever, that's fine. Like, you know, whatever. Like, his, I know that he's got fans and all those things. He's not for me, but I like the idea of Jodorowsky's Dune a lot more than I would have liked the movie that he made, I think.
Yeah, I think you're totally onto something, which is why I kind of like the documentary, because it's like, oh, listen to what we almost had. But you're absolutely right. I'll bet if we had that version of the movie, it's hard to say, but like, I'm kind of with you on Jodorowsky. I haven't seen all of his movies. I like Santa Sangre, or at least I can like appreciate it. I'm impressed by it. I don't revisit it ever. But yeah, it's neat the way it connects all these dots to like, oh, because of this project, we got this, this, and this.
Yeah.
Instead, and it's like, well, I don't want to live in a world where we don't have those, so I'm kind of glad that this version of Dune fell through.
The best version of it is the book that apparently exists that you can flip through and this documentary. That's the best outcome. Yeah, totally. And that brings us to Dune Part 2.
Dune Part 2. Here's the thing. I sat down to see Dune Part 2, first show on Friday. And the trailers begin to unveil themselves. And it's literally one after another. Here's a new Godzilla Kong movie. Here's a new Ghostbusters movie. Here's a new Planet of the Apes movie. Here's a new Mad Max movie.
Deadpool.
Here's a new, I didn't get a Deadpool. But like, I think there were seven trailers, and every single one of them was based on IP, sequel, remake, whatever you want to call it. And I got very disheartened. And hearing you talk about Spaceman and Leave the World Behind, I grow disheartened. But then I saw Dune Part 2, and I was like, movies are back, motherfucker.
You know what's cool about movies? You can put big fucking worms in them that go through the sand, and
people
just
floating up to a ship. What is? I love it.
You can put like three sandworms in a frame, and they crash into things. You can put Christopher Walken on a throne in a movie if you want to.
Mines that float through the air and attach themselves to shit before exploding. Yeah.
How cool was that?
Yeah, no, Dune Part 2 fucking rules, and there's so much about it that frustrates me. I've been avoiding social media on purpose because just today I saw somebody soliciting a take for an article. The tweet was like, is anybody interested in writing a piece about Dune Part 2 and cultural appropriation? Hit me up. And I was like, well, first of all, you're shaping the perspective just by with the pitch.
Yes.
And second of all, you're just looking to start shit. Which isn't to say that there can't be a very good piece written about Dune Part 2 and cultural appropriation, even though I would argue that that's in the text of the movie.
Yeah.
Right, exactly. the pitch made it seem more of like a, we're looking for a gotcha. But I was like, right. No, I'm pretty sure Denis Villeneuve is like two steps ahead of you.
Pretty sure he's aware of that. That's kind of what the whole thing is about. And somebody who just finished, like, is about maybe 50 pages away from finishing his first reread of Dune in about 20 years. Frank Herbert was aware of it too.
Yeah.
No, Dune Part 2 was awesome. I was a huge fan of the first one, obviously, and I know that it's not for everybody. I know the pace was not for everybody, and it felt like half a movie, and I said all those things in my review of the first part Part 1. To me, Part 2 picks up and finishes, not even finishes, kind of continues, because obviously, spoilers, there will almost definitely be now a Dune Part 3. It's such a smart adaptation. Again, having just reread the book, I even more so appreciate Villeneuve's approach to it, because the book is full of bullshit, folks. Like, I love that book. It's one of my favorite books since I was in middle school. But rereading it now as an adult, I'm like, man, he was so smart to cut that out, to cut that all the palace intrigue stuff, all the world building that you would have to explain, where characters who are not even connected remotely to the story come in and explain something and then leave. Just, I mean, it was the 60s. It was sci-fi in the 60s. We were, it makes sense given the context of the time the novel was written. But he is so smart about, and his co-writers have been so smart about keeping it centered on the characters. Keeping it centered on, like, well, I'm going to touch on these couple themes. I'm going to make it, you know, the focus on the Bene Gesserit and the mothers as opposed to the Mentats. And again, if you're a Dune nerd, you know what I'm talking about. But like, if you don't, it's all very good and right. And I'm smart. That's. But I just love his approach. I love the character. I love the way that Zendaya is in charge of this movie after a lot of people complain that she, and rightfully so, complain that she really was just a cameo at the end of the first movie. I love that. I think for me, and I said this in my review, I think this is her movie. You and I discussed over text the Spider-Man 2 ending, which just rules. It's my favorite part of the movie. And I just adored it. I've really, again, I'm not on Twitter anymore, so I don't see a lot of the bad takes, but even just reading a couple major critics who have, I think I've just been like searching for contrarianism, trying to find it. And again, I've been on the wrong side of lots of takes, and I understand. I've written reviews of movies that I don't think are good and that people love. And I understand what it's like when you're just like not gelling with the popular consensus. I understand that. And I'm not accusing anybody of any other, you know, intentions or ulterior motives, but like sometimes I'm just like, I don't think we watch the same movie, you know what I mean? This feels like you're actively trying to not appreciate what the movie is doing.
Mm-hmm.
And it feels a little cynical and it feels intentional, but again, I'm being defensive of the movie. I've been in that situation where I'm just like, I'm not seeing the same movie everybody else is, but I'm so happy that it's doing well. It had a great opening weekend. I was just talking to some students about it who have been excited to see it and were excited to see it. And especially for a generation of kids. And again, I work with teenagers, so I'm very focused on like them and their thoughts and what's going on with their pop culture diet. Being that they were raised on a diet of Marvel movies and streaming stuff that, you know, doesn't look cinematic. To have something in theaters that will send a young person there, sit in front of a gigantic screen and see a movie like that, that is specifically directed for scale, not, you know, Quantumania where everything looks like a cartoon video game and like looks like noise, like where it's like, oh no, when you properly shoot something in a real environment and you set your scale, you set your characters in certain ways, like just the way that movie looks, like when, especially like, again, like just thinking the sandworm scene, not to spoil anything for anybody, like the sandworm scene, I keep coming back to in my head where Paul's pacing back and forth along the dune that's deep focus composition that like you just don't ever see in a movie that's shot on in a parking lot on a green screen. Like that's stuff that kids don't see anymore.
Yeah.
So aside from the movie just ripping and being awesome, I'm just so excited that it's this big, loud, epic. And I'm excited to watch it again and again.
I have so many things I want to ask about. Okay. Do you think we'll ever get a theatrical release of Dune, The Whole Bloody Affair?
We talked about this over text. You were saying like you wish there was like a road show. I don't know. It depends. I will be first in line to buy a ticket, though. I'll tell you that much. And
I
I
will
think a
be
lot of people
second.
will agree with me. I think it's possible. I think that
Okay.
Villeneuve is probably it's such he there, see, again, this is the other thing we gotta talk about, which is as much as I was pissed off that it didn't come out last year, and as sad as I was that it got delayed, man, did they nail it, because we're in a dead zone right now. And it's like,
Yeah.
no, this was actually a much better time for it to come out
Right.
because it can just run the show for a couple of weeks. You know what I mean? Like,
Yeah.
there's nothing behind it or really ahead of it right now. If I saw, especially since, you know, maybe Oscar season, maybe even late summer, early fall, when we start to get into awardsy stuff, and we got to remind everybody about Dune 2 because it's been a couple months.
Yeah.
Maybe you get a road show, a double feature, you know, coming to
Yeah, like
theaters.
there's got to be some IMAX real estate opening up in September, right?
Yeah, I'm
Nothing's.
thinking that's it's perfect for that. You know what I mean?
I really hope they do it. And whatever, they could do a little 15-minute intermission or whatever, but I just want to sit down and
Watch
see
both
them
of those.
both back to back.
Yeah.
I love that people are digging this movie. I love that people are excited about this movie. I have been online more than you, and I do get a little bit frustrated by, it just came out this past weekend, and a lot of the conversation is about that cameo and what that cameo means and how soon before we announce Dune Messiah. And there's part of me that's like, is this the Marvelification of the movie-going experience where it's like, we can't enjoy the thing we have. We have to know what's next.
The movie, to be fair, the movie invites that, I will say. Like, the movie is very explicitly like, I thought I went in thinking it was going to be Dune Part 2, close out the novel, when really
Okay.
it's Empire Strikes Back. I mean, it's very much setting up, like, there are things in the novel that this movie hasn't gotten to yet. And there are things in Dune Messiah that will also be a part of whatever that third movie is. But I agree with you in spirit, which is like, can't we just enjoy the thing that we have? And can't we
Right.
just, but this is, again, this is how we've been taught to, this is how the movie and pop culture media ecosystem online has
Right.
been designed, where it's
Right.
like, we have to have this conversation. We have to have this. We have to have that. We have to have stakes. We have to have what's coming next. You have to be able to write those, like, you know, articles where it's like, you know, that cameo, you know, and what it means for this, and like,
Right.
you know, ending explained on YouTube and all that shit. And you need to have, and again,
Those are
we're part
called
of,
dune bait.
I mean, we're part of the ecosystem. I understand that we're sitting here podcasting, and, you know, I understand that we're part of it too, but like, I don't think we're part of the same hypocrisy, frankly. I think we put out quality stuff that doesn't quite cater to the lowest common denominator the way that some of this bullshit does. But, again, I'm not seeing a lot of it, but I believe it's there. Right now, my position is the more people talking about Dune,
Yeah, for sure.
the better.
Absolutely. I we were texting back and forth, and I said, like, after Lord of the Rings, I kind of thought we would never get another Lord of the Rings. And it's early to say, because if there is a third Dune movie, maybe it becomes Rise of Skywalker, maybe it completely shits the bed, and maybe it's like we can't talk about this trilogy in the same way. But at least right now, this feels like the closest thing we've had to Lord of the Rings in 20 something years.
And based on what Villeneuve's been saying in interviews, he seems cognizant of that.
Yeah.
He's like, I'm not sure. He's like, we're not done writing the third one yet. He's like, I'm definitely not making it next. I want to make something else cool off. I want, like, I'm not, like, again, speaking of like Rise of Skywalker, like what they say,
Yeah.
oh, we rushed those movies out too fast, right? We
Right.
weren't yet. So, and he's like, I got to make sure it's something worth making. I got to make sure it's bigger and better and all that. And I also want to make sure that we don't kind of, to use your phrase, like, Marvelize it. Like, he doesn't
Right.
want it to be, we're going to make five of them. He's like, I want to make a trilogy. If it's a trilogy, it's three stories and that's it, and we're out. Does the reality of the movie marketplace allow that? I don't know. Obviously, there's this TV show that's allegedly in development that I still don't believe we'll ever see.
I don't need that. I
I
don't
don't
need
need that either.
Dune-related IP. As much as I'm into Dune right now, I'm not in the mode for like, give me all the Dune you've got. Like, no, I'll wait until the next movie comes out and I'll just watch one and two until then.
And at this point, he's earned my patience. He's earned the benefit of the doubt, as far as I'm concerned. Because again, being back into Dune again, rewatching the first one, watching this one, reading the book, I'm like, you know what? These are in the it's in the right hands. I
Yeah.
want to see. I'm not only anxious to see the next movie, I'm anxious to see his adaptation specifically of this material. Because Dune, besides a weird book, it only gets weirder from there. I don't think they go on with the remainder of the series, or at least I don't think he does.
Okay.
Because the characters just aren't the same after that. After Dune Messiah, it's a whole different cast of characters, more or less. But I'm very, very excited for what this movie is doing. It feels like, again, we lament the past monoculture. You know, this doesn't happen anymore, where everybody is talking about things. I can make a sandworm reference now, and people, my students understand it, because like, oh, like Dune, like the worms and stuff like that. It's like, yes, like that's the, and obviously Dune's been around for 80 years. Like, it's
Right.
not, or whatever it is,
Sure.
40, 60 years. It's not a new property, and it's not the first time it's been adapted and all that. But this is just I just think it's the perfect marriage of material and creator, and like moment in our pop culture, where we've talked for a year about the movies being back, and 2023 was such a great year for Barbenheimer and all that stuff. It's like, maybe the movies are back. Maybe we're done with Marvel, and maybe the streaming services are gonna, maybe we'll bring more mid-budget stuff up, and A24 has got all this attention, so maybe there's an independent movement again and all that. And very similar to the 80s, where, basically, where the early 90s, where the corporate studio system collapses in on itself, and we have this rise in indie film. And I think it's cyclical. I do think we'll see that again. And Marvel is kind of the, Marvel co not collapsing, but I mean, come on, is, I think, very similar to that 80s kind of corporate Hollywood collapse. So I think we'll see some good stuff. I'm really excited.
Is Denis Villeneuve the best science fiction filmmaker currently working? And if he is, who is he replacing?
Right. Science fiction filmmaking. I mean, I feel like the problem is like, it's really just, in terms of scale, it's really just him and Nolan. Like, I feel like it's just, in terms of people who are working on this scale, there are tons of really cool independent sci-fi movies out there. There are tons of really cool smaller, like, I loved, like, you're like, you, what was the hell is the name of that movie? You Won't Be Alone. You're Alone in the House. What's the Caitlin Dever movie that I loved, with a terrible title?
No one will save you.
No One Will Save You. That's what You Will Be Alone in the House.
And
I don't
yet I
know.
knew exactly what you were talking about.
Right? I would argue, I mean, I loved Arrival. I don't know how cultural consciousness has changed on that. I loved Blade Runner 2049 too. I mean, I for me, and I loved Enemy. Like, that was the first Villeneuve movie I saw. I don't want to say, because I'm not looking at a list of directors right now, that yes, that's true, but is he among the best? I would agree. I would say yes.
Is he one of the best filmmakers currently working, full stop?
He is one of the best. He is one of the few filmmakers, I think, right now, in terms of contemporary filmmakers, if you look at your Nolans, now your Greta Gerwigs, I think Villeneuve is like, when Denis Villeneuve makes a movie, it's going to be an event regardless of what it is.
Yeah.
Yes.
Okay.
I do think he is one of the new celebrity directors. Like Tarantino,
Nice.
obviously,
Yeah.
but like, in terms of a new class. Yeah. And which is, I mean, I gotta say, relatively recent, because even through Arrival, through 2049, that's
It's
not the
really
case.
just Dune
I think
that
it's Dune. I think
elevates
it's Dune that
him
did it for him. Yeah.
to like a Peter Jackson, because he's been making cool shit since.
Totally, yeah. I
I never
mean,
saw his French movies. I haven't seen Incendies, and I haven't seen the other one.
no,
He
but
comes
like,
on my
again,
radar with Prisoners.
Prisoners, Enemy,
Yeah,
Sicario.
he hasn't missed, as far as I'm concerned. I like some
No,
of his
not for
movies
me.
better than others, but.
Yeah. No, not for me. Yeah, I think, I mean, now that we're kind of phrasing it that way, again, I'm hesitant, because it's like, oh my God, I'm definitely forgetting somebody, but yeah, no, I think when you see his name on a marquee now, it's going to mean something. I really do.
One of the things I love about Dune Part Two, and this is a show about Nightcrawler. One of the things I love about Dune Part Two, I'm not 100% sold on Timothy Chalamet just in general. I think he's always good in movies. I think he's great as Paul Atreides. This is not a commentary or criticism of his performance. There's just something about maybe the celebrity aspect of Timothy Chalamet combined with his performances that I'm just a little bit like, I don't know the Wonka of it all. But him and Zendaya both have a way of acting, specifically in Dune. And I so appreciate, I mean, I was listening to like The Big Picture and they referred to it as being that they give very modern performances. For me, it's like they don't act like they know they're in an epic. They just are weirdly natural. And it's like it's so accessible because as much as I love the David Lynch Dune, everybody in that movie knows they're in Dune. Everybody in that movie knows that they're in this important,
they're playing heavy to the cheap seats
science fiction movie. And in this, they're just like, no, we're 20 and we're falling in love.
And so much of the epic, I mean, again, Zendaya's face is one of the best special effects in movies. Not saying, like, oh, because she's beautiful. I mean, she is. But, like, she is just, and again, I wrote this in my review, like, she just has, she's just a natural. She's just, you look at her, it's like Florence Pugh, it's like Kristen Stewart. It's just like, you look at them, you're like, that's a fucking movie star. That person just acquits themselves so naturally and so well on screen. The camera loves them. And you're just like, it just makes it easy. And so much of the epic scale of this movie is close-ups of their faces. You know what I mean? Like it's like Oppenheimer. It's an epic of close-ups, you know, and it lends itself to exactly what you're talking about. And to me is interesting because I have the skepticism of it as well. I think he's very aware of that. I think he's very aware of like, am I a leading man or not? And I think the text of Dune obviously deals with that.
Sure.
I love his in the French Dispatch where he tells who's he tell? The one character he says I'm insecure about my new muscles, right? Don't look at me.
Oh,
my new muscles.
Is it Francis McDormand?
It's his Francis McDormand character. Yeah. And I love the French Dispatch. I think that's like top tier Wes, and I know nobody agrees with me, but that's okay. But I think he's conscious of that. I think he's conscious of the fact that he's kind of unconventional. And I think so much of, as you said, the Paul Atreides character, like, it's kind of about the fact that he's like, am I a movie star or not? You know, or am I too pretty? Or am I too this? Or am I too that? Am I posturing? Well, I think Paul is posturing a lot, you know, which is kind of part of the text again. I read a thing that was like, oh, he's so not believable in that last scene where he's yelling at everybody. I'm like, the point is that he is. It's just like,
congratulations on getting the movie.
You're so close to getting it. You're so close to getting it. You know what I mean? I think they're both movie stars and I'm so excited. I mean, again, talk about prestige marquee names now, like not that Dune did this for either of them, but I mean, in some ways, maybe for Timmy, like, we knew who he was and stuff like that, but does this propel him to something else? It's possible.
Between this and Wonka,
and
for
like
sure.
Wonka, yeah. Zendaya obviously was already like kind of, you know, the kids know Zendaya, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
We do too from Spider-Man and all that. But
are you more, this is my last question and then we'll move on. Are you more excited about the Zendaya gay tennis movie or the Kristen Stewart gay bodybuilding movie?
I see the gay bodybuilding movie next week and I'm so excited.
I can't go to the screening. And I never go to screenings, but that one I was like, oh, I'll see that one because I can't wait the 3 extra days, but I can't go.
Well, I'm going to be texting you the whole time.
All right, thank
I
you.
I'm probably more excited for the K2 one it's probably going to be a little bit more my speed, but man, with the Challengers trailer, it's just like, this looks so trashy. I'm so excited. Like it looks so, and I love Luca, you know, I know a lot of people have mixed feelings about Luca, but both of them. I mean, why not both, Patrick? Why not both?
Sure. No, yeah. I'm with you.
I'm super excited.
Movies are back.
Movies are back, baby.
I have like two movies that I'll talk about quickly because we spent a lot of time on Dune Part 2. No, please. That's great. The first is I'm using this term loosely, documentary that I watched on Netflix called The Greatest Night in Pop. And it is about the recording, the writing and recording of We Are the World. Now, I am older than you. You did not grow up with We Are the World. I did. So this was, I watched it with Erica. It literally was just pushing nostalgia buttons the whole time. It's just like, remember this person? Remember this person? Remember when you could turn on the radio and hear a Cyndi Lauper song and then a Lionel Richie song and then a Prince song? And even though they all belong to different subgenres of music, it just, not everything was so stratified, and it was like you could just hear it all on the same radio station. And we long for monoculture like that. It's fascinating because it's like, look at what went into the writing and recording of this song. They brought together these 40 huge artists. It was all very complicated. It all happened in a very short amount of time. They were writing the song basically the week that they recorded it. So it's a fun documentary. They get a lot of good talking heads. But at the end of the day, it's like, We Are the World is a bad song. So it's like, all this work went into writing a song that's kind of shitty, you know? Yeah. But like, their hearts were in the right place. And they raised a lot of money for starving kids in Africa. And that's to be commended. But artistically, it's kind of a shitty song.
I think it was probably more about the pop culture moment. I mean, I am younger than you, but I do remember the video. I remember them all singing and everybody like that was, I remember because I had the huge, biggest crush on Cyndi Lauper. Like, and so I remember like seeing her all tiny there with her little cans on her ear and singing and stuff like that. And
she has a great moment in the documentary where she's recording, she's belting out her little solo. Mm-hmm. And it's fascinating because they had to record the thing in one night. They said, if we start putting people in booths, it's going to take us 3 weeks to record this. We have one night, and it was the night of the American Music Awards because they knew everybody was going to be in Los Angeles. Right, exactly. Yeah. So Cyndi Lauper keeps recording, and they're like, it sounds like people are talking. People are laughing. What's going on? They couldn't isolate this noise. And then finally they realize it's all of her like jewelry. It's all her dangly necklaces and earrings and shit that are like clanging together. And so it was adorable. She takes them off and then everything's fine.
Yeah. No, I will get around to it. I've heard a couple people talking about it, so I will definitely watch it.
Super watchable. Nothing but empty calories.
Sure.
The other movie that I'll talk about, I will barely talk about. I'm going to use the term documentary even more loosely, if that's possible, because we watched a little movie called This Is Me, .. The Jennifer Lopez $20 million. What the fuck? It's not a documentary. It's sort of an assemblage of music videos.
I've heard it compared to Sky Captain in the World of Tomorrow.
I mean, there is like a sequence that's very much probably owes a lot to Sky Captain in the World of Tomorrow. Your boy Ben does appear.
That's why I gotta watch it at some point.
He's on a motorcycle. He also appears under heavy, heavy prosthetics as like a talking, like a Bill O'Reilly type. Hold on, I have to look up his name. As that character, because it's Rex Stone. He's a Bill O'Reilly type newscaster by the name of Rex Stone under heavy, almost like Zack Snyder Watchmen prosthetics, where it's like, this is supposed to look fake, right? He's not supposed to actually resemble Richard Nixon.
Heightened, yeah.
Yeah, there we go. Fat Joe is J-Lo's therapist. Her life is being commented on by all these celestial beings who are all named after zodiac signs.
Sure.
Played by the likes of Jane Fonda and Neil deGrasse Tyson and I'm trying to remember who some of the others were. Some were people I didn't know. Keke Palmer was one of them. Trevor Noah, Post Malone, Sofia Vergara. And it's all about J-Lo being a love addict and marrying several people, the wrong people. And then there's song and dance numbers. She does a Singing in the Rain thing. There's a weird science fiction thing where she's feeding flower petals into this giant engine.
Is there a song explicitly about how Ben Affleck was the right person to marry?
I think so. Because I was looking at the song titles at the end. Oh, shit. Now I have to pull up the soundtrack because I swear Dear Ben Part 2.
Okay.
Is a song on this album.
Damn well better be.
And in this movie. It's the fucking goddamnedest thing. It runs like 68 minutes. It's like, short as fuck.
In a Jodorowsky's Dune way, like in a like a holy shit, like is its audacity an asset or is it like okay.
It's not good.
Okay.
But I just kept watching, being like, she invested her own $20 million for this vision.
Right.
And it is a vision.
Okay.
I don't totally get what she was trying to achieve. I don't totally get. I mean, I guess what she's trying to say is I was a love addict who was with all the wrong people until the right guy came along a second time. I highly recommend watching it. It's not good.
I've floated past it several times, you know, I'm kind of, and listen, much like Kevin Smith, I am largely skeptical of Jennifer Lopez and her place in Ben Affleck's life. But I wish her well, God bless her. I mean, she's obviously got a very complicated story to tell apparently. And we should all have
it's
$20 million
so much more
story.
Complicated than you ever thought.
I apparently so.
because it involves space engines and flower petals.
So we're talking like, is it like a Cloud Atlas situation here? Like,
yes, that's okay. Probably the best point of comparison. If Cloud right. Atlas had shittier pop songs.
Jennifer Lopez knows the true.
But then there's video today. I saw somebody posted a video on Twitter of Ben and J-Lo leaving a movie theater and like cleaning up all the garbage in their row. And I just was like, I love them.
Again, I've gone on at length about middle-aged Ben Affleck and what a fan I am and how I hope I age into him. And so God bless him. I wish him nothing but nothing but luck. I hope it was cathartic for her to have her vision finally on screen. And I will certainly watch it at some point.
I wonder what the conversations are in their house when Ben Affleck is the guy who's writing Good Will Hunting and The Last Duel and right. directing fucking Gone Baby Gone. And like, this dude is a capital A artist. And I'm not saying J-Lo isn't, but like, she has a very different kind of art than he does. And when she's like, hey, would you mind playing Rex Stone in my fucking pop music Cloud Atlas? And he's got to be like, I love you. So yes.
And then also like be in my Duncan commercial where I play the fool and you get to play the high status character. Right. Like, you know what I mean? Like that's, I mean, he, listen again, true love is,
yes.
is it's a beautiful thing and God bless them. I hope they're happy and
I'm all in. I'm all in on them.
J-Lo guy, but that's good for her. I'm very happy for her.
Hey, have you seen Nightcrawler?
Yeah, oh, the Jake Gyllenhaal one?
From 2014.
Where he's kind of a creep.
Is this the one where he's a creep and he's screaming at Rebecca Ferguson and making her want to quit acting?
No, that's the other one.
Is it Jake Gyllenhaal? Did we determine that that's who it was?
I am fairly certain that that is the case.
For
yes.
the movie Life, like
we
you're gonna
have a whole Gyllenhaal thing. Listen, I'm a Swiftie. We have a whole Gyllenhaal thing we have to get to in a few minutes, and we will get there. Okay, like don't listen. I've got a whole section.
I,
in my notes
okay,
on that.
As somebody who doesn't know the Taylor Swift lore,
yeah,
I'm a Jake Gyllenhaal guy. I have been since Bubble Boy. I was like, this guy put himself out there in this fucking movie. And then I see to bring up Prisoners again, and I'm like, mm-hmm. man, look at what he's doing in Prisoners. What a commitment to being a fucking weirdo. And then I hear this story, and I'm like, don't make me hate Jake Gyllenhaal.
Yeah.
It's not confirmed that it was him, but like,
it's again,
and it's for the movie Life. Are you
right. Which is
me?
Just like, what are we doing here? Yeah.
For
Life? And you hear stories, and stories are stories, and we're not there, and we're not here trading gossip. Okay.
No, that's what
unless
this podcast
is about. J-Lo
is
and
now.
Ben.
We're not on Spotify anymore. We're going pure gossip. Nobody's listening. It's literally just you and me now.
Yeah, it is, which is fine. So, yes. Okay. So Gyllenhaal. Yes. So yeah, no, I am totally 100%. And again, Swifties, I apologize. I am a Gyllenhaal guy. I enjoy Gyllenhaal. I think he's a great actor. I think he's quietly one of the best parts of Zodiac. I think he makes such interesting, fascinating choices. I mean, Ambulance again gets a full extra star and a half because of Gyllenhaal's performance in that, where he's just playing like coked up psychopath.
I need to rewatch Ambulance.
Say it again.
I need to rewatch Ambulance.
Yeah,
you just
we should all
me.
rewatch
That
Ambulance.
Movie rules.
It's awesome. Yes. I think he's. I think this is quietly one of. I don't know. I think this is one of his best performances. I brought this up because
it's
I just
this
feel
and
like.
Bubble Boy.
Yes. I feel like we don't talk about this movie, which I know is a thing we say about 80% of the movies we talk about, and I understand that. And you're
because
probably...
we're so busy talking about This Is Me Now. It's sucking up all the oxygen.
Let's talk more about Dune 2. But I just, from the night I saw this movie opening weekend, I was like, this is, and it's something I come back to all the time. It really, I kind of discovered the Gilroys from this. Like, I really liked, and I think they're such an interesting writing, directing kind of team. And I think it's like one of the best, like, unsung LA movies. Like, I think it's a great city movie, you know, much in the same way I think Die Hard with a Vengeance is an unsung New York movie. I think that this is like a really good unsung LA movie. I really adore it. I think it's something that it's a nice example of form following function, following theme. Like, it's just a really neatly written movie. It's a great screenplay. It's a great performance. I think Riz Ahmed, it's just probably where I really started to recognize who Riz Ahmed was. And obviously,
yeah,
he's,
me too.
You know, an actor now who's done tons of awesome things, and we're all big fans of his, I think. It's just this like quiet, sleazy little movie that I just think is like kind of just this perfect little moment. And I just really wanted to talk about it because I think it deserves it.
No, it's amazing. And I saw it in 2014 and I reviewed it for the site. And I'm pretty sure I said, this is one of the best movies of the year. And then we did our top 10 movies of the year and I put it on my list. And I haven't seen it since. I haven't seen it in 10 years. And we're not talking about it. And in fact, when I went to go take it off my shelf, imagine my surprise when I discovered I don't own this fucking movie.
Oh, shit.
And I don't know how that happened because I really liked this movie and it was one of my favorite movies of 2014. And yet, for whatever reason, I was like, I never got around to picking up Nightcrawler.
Mm-hmm.
So instead, I subscribed to a 7-day free trial of Stars so that I could watch it. Which reminds me, I have to cancel my 7-day
you
free
can do it
trial
right
of
away.
Stars.
So you can. So when you do the subscription and then you play the movie, you can cancel the subscription right away. And
okay.
Because that's what I have to do because I'll forget.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I don't want to pay $10 for a month of Stars.
Speaking,
what the fuck am I going to watch on Stars?
Yeah. Speaking of canceling subscriptions, Spotify. If you have a Spotify account, make sure you get rid of that until after this movie is reinstated. Write them at www.spotify.com/fthismovie.
I think it's because we talked too much about Dune 2 on a Nightcrawler show.
That's probably what it is.
Spotify has high standards for that shit. But this movie rules. It was somehow even better than I remembered.
Totally. Where are you going to start?
Jake Gyllenhaal is one of our great movie weirdos.
Yes.
Like, he is, and for whatever reason, it doesn't bother me when he kind of physically transforms, when he does a bunch of tics, when he leans into being a weirdo,
mm-hmm.
the way it does with like a Christian Bale. I'm not a Christian Bale guy. I've seen him give good performances. I have nothing against Christian Bale. He's never a reason for me to see a movie.
Something.
Jake Gyllenhaal is, which isn't to say that I've seen every Jake Gyllenhaal, because like Southpaw exists. I haven't watched that shit. But Christian Bale, every time he does one of his, or like a, you know, Jared Leto for a little while, all of their
it doesn't
look
feel
at,
like it's in service of anything with those
no,
guys.
It's a little bit of like, look at me, I'm a weirdo. Look at me, I'm committed. And I don't know, with Gyllenhaal, he loses all this weight. He's all gaunt. His hair's all slicked down. Mm-hmm. And like, he's just a fucking weirdo in the best way.
They described, I'm looking for the note here, somebody described him as like a, he's like a wombat or a weasel or something, like something like he was specifically, there's like an animal motif coyote. He's a coyote. Like he's like gaunt and pulled back. And I think it's a fascinating movie. I think that it's a really cool, moody movie. And I think what it's saying about sort of capitalism and about media culture, there's a degree to which you could say that it's kind of like, I like that it's very blunt in its messaging, but I don't think it's like didactic. Like, I don't think it's like yelling at you. I think it's really interesting in the way it says very obvious things, which I think is a really difficult needle to thread. I think a lot of the Rene Russo character is responsible for that as well, which is like
100%. I think she's the one who gets away with the movie's messaging.
Yes.
Better than Gyllenhaal. And again, her character is like, we've seen that character a million times. Oh, she's the news director who's ruthless. Okay. Right. No shit.
Yeah.
But the parallels between her and Gyllenhaal are so fascinating, because all that separates them is like her ability to function in the world.
It's like it's like they're like two sides of the same coin.
Yes.
I love that she really genuine, like there's that, again, that scene at the end, we're skipping right to the end. the scene at the end where she brings him that, he brings her that final footage, and they're in that moment in the video room where they're watching it on the edit bay, and it's shot like a love scene. It's shot like a kiss, like a climactic kiss, the two of them. And she's like, it's amazing. Thank you for bringing it to me. You're like, she is legitimately like, she
is turned on,
sees his value in lots of different ways. And like, and again, obviously there's things about this movie where, you know, he's abusing his privilege. He's threatening her. He's sexually coercing her for all these things. But like the way she kind of, I don't want to say comes around to that, but like comes to respect a lot of his approach in a sick kind of way, like a lot of like his ruthlessness at the very least, not the coercion part, but like the fact that he's willing to be ruthless. And she tells the Ted Shaw guy, the other director, like, he's, you know, he's showing us something about ourselves, or he's teaching us some things about ourselves or whatever. It's like dark as shit. It's super cynical, but like it's almost emboldened. It almost makes him the hero of the story. And we have to get into this whole other thing where the way the movie, like, I love the score.
Yeah,
because the score plays it for most of it like he's a hero. Like, I think it's James Newton Howard who does this like really like uplifting kind of like dun, 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 like doing our thing, saving the day kind of score throughout the movie. And you're like, no, he's doing sick, twisted, terrible shit.
Right.
Like when he moves the body in the first crash, again, we're jumping right in the movie here. But when when he moves the body, the score, if you go back to listen to it, it's like Rocky battling, you know, in a fight, like he did something great. And that's what I think the movie does so well, which is like, the movie plays its own like sociopathy like forward without being like, hey, audience, you're sick. Aren't you sick? Don't you feel shitty about being sick? Like, don't you recognize what a bad thing you're doing by paying attention to all this crap? It's like, no, we all pay attention to it and we're all culpable in it. And that's, I think, so much of what the movie's about.
The only reason, I forget the guy's name, the other news guy you said, Ted something.
It's Ted Shaw. He plays Ted Shaw on Mad Men.
Ted Shaw on Mad Men. His name is... It's fine. Ted Shaw. We're just going to call him Ted Shaw. He's Frank Cruz in the movie. His name is Kevin Rom.
Kevin Rom.
But he's Ted Shaw.
He's Ted Shaw. Chaga.
He's the only sort of moral compass that we get in the movie. And I almost think the movie doesn't need him.
Doesn't need him, yeah.
It doesn't need a guy to bounce off of and say, this is wrong, and we should have journalistic standards. And I get that there's, like, a reality to that. Yes, there is a guy in the newsroom who may speak up and say, like, hey, this shit's wrong. But there is a part of me that wishes that the movie would solely be populated by sociopaths.
Yeah, I think that maybe... because Gyllenhaal can't be... everywhere. Like Gyllenhaal in the movie is not, Lou is not assertive. I mean, he's assertive in the way that he's self-possessed, but like, I think that maybe Russo just needed, as you said, somebody to bounce off of to illustrate the this is a sickness that goes around mm-hmm. to everybody. Mm-hmm. And even when she says to him, Rene Russo says to him, like, you know, your job is to get the weather girl to stand sideways or something like that. Like, stop pretending like we're noble. You know what I mean? And that's, you know, he's kind of kidding himself as well. And there's that whole thing at the end where he's like, hey, you know, that house, it wasn't even, you know, it was. And she's like, no, the story is not, right. Oh, there was cocaine in that house. No, the story is inner city crime seeping into the suburbs. That's right. What we sell. That's the, you know, and that's like such a, I mean, and not that it was prescient necessarily in 2013, because it's the same now. But like, when you see some of these news cycles and you see some of these channels where it's just like, no, it literally is just like our narrative is, you know, immigrants, whatever, you know, right. Gay people, everybody is poisoning your nice little WASPy family. And that's the narrative we're running with, whether it's true or not. I think it's a really, I was thinking about Network, obviously. And I was thinking about like, is this movie a successor, quote unquote, to Network, or is it as thoughtful? And I think it's like, I think they're very different. I think it's apples and oranges.
Yeah.
But just in terms of filmmaking styles, but I do think this accomplishes a lot of the same, it accomplishes a lot of the same things, because I do think it's as much a celebration of late stage capitalism, if that makes sense. Like, it's like this crazy, because Lou Bloom is a walking business seminar. Like, right. He's like, you know what I mean? Like, that the idea that he is literally exactly what people say, you know, he pulls himself up by his bootstraps. He works hard. He's innovative. He does the thing that no one else will do. He is the pamphlet for the American business person. Right?
Sell like, me this pen.
Sell me this pen. Exactly. Like, he speaks in that corporate bullshit. Yep. He knows, I love the scenes where he's talking to, you know, whether it's the Riz Ahmed character or the two kids at the end or the three kids at the end where he puts them in the vans. And he's like, the way he kind of, we in the nominating council have decided that you are, you know, like, you're purposeful, and you're like, the way his whole affect changes when he's talking to, like, he's being business person. Mm-hmm. It does a couple things, but one of the major things it does is it shows you just how bullshit all of that is. Like, right. That whole corporate speak, that whole, you know, but he believes it. And when you back off and say, no, this is exactly what we say America is, and we invite it, and that's what we want.
It's right there in the first 10 minutes. He gives a long monologue to the guy in the pawn shop where he's doing the hustler speech.
I've read a pamphlet.
And then the guy just says, I'm not going to hire a fucking criminal. And it's like, oh, right, he's a fucking criminal. And it sucks the air out of everything he just said. Mm-hmm. But at the same time, it's like, that's who he is the entire movie. Lou Bloom doesn't change. He just becomes more successful. You know?
And if anything else, it's, I mean, the end is so dark, because it's like, he accomplished exactly what he wanted to accomplish.
Right.
By sticking to it, being ruthless, being tenacious, you know.
And finding someone who's in a position of power, who's just as fucked up as he is.
Exactly. And it really is, at the end of the day, it's this thing of saying, like, look how fucked up our system is, that these are the people who succeed in it. This is what, you know, and again, like, is that blunt and obvious? Maybe. But I don't think in the delivery of the movie it is. I think the movie is really elegant about the way it does that.
Yeah, well, and it manages to be like gripping and entertaining, which is something that like Adam McKay hasn't figured out. Right. It's he just wants to hit you with a message.
Yes.
But he hasn't figured out how to put it inside of a movie that you fucking give a shit about. I mean, mm-hmm. the closest he's come is when he puts Margot Robbie in a bubble bath and then has to call attention to the fact that, like, the only way I can get you to listen to this is by putting Margot Robbie in a bubble bath. And that's the best he's done, you know.
Yeah, that's,
and
I mean, really, is that the high point? I think that might be the high point. Yeah.
This movie at least succeeds as like a sort of neo-noir thriller on top of all its blunt messaging. I mean, mm-hmm. the scenes where he's filming the home invasion, or the whole last sequence with the cops and all that. Nice. I mean, that shit is suspenseful as hell.
Those moments where you recognize him again, we talk about like a hero's journey and a plot, you draw it up on a whiteboard, right? And you're like, okay, so he gets the camera. And he learns from Bill Paxton how to do it the right way.
Right.
Then he finally gets to the crime scene ahead of everybody else. Then he gets to the crime scene before the cops do. Then he gets to the crime scene before, you know,
before the crime.
Then he's engineering the crime. And then he's positioning things to get the right, like that whole last sequence, like, again, not to spoil anything, but like when he's able to just be like, I think there's a moment near the end of that movie where he decides that a certain character is going to die. And it's like, and he's just like, you see it in his face. He's like, oh, okay, this is going to happen now. Like, because you're not aligning with my vision. And again, I don't want to spoil the whole movie, but like, I think that that is so, so, so gripping and interesting. And like what makes the movie a great thriller on top of, as you said, this like sort of social commentary.
Right. I so appreciate the fact, and you touched upon how gross and abusive Lou Bloom is with the Rene Russo character. Mm-hmm. And yet we get a scene where he essentially lays it out. Like, I want you to sleep with me as part of his negotiation. And then we cut away from said negotiation and we leave it with her turning him down. And it doesn't come up again until very late in the movie when he says, I want you to do those things that I say in the bedroom and I don't want you to complain about it. And it's like, oh, she's been fucking him this whole time. Mm-hmm. That is wild. So I like that theirs is a business transaction. Again, it's abuse. It's coercive. It's I'm not 100%. Condoning what he's doing.
No,
but I applaud the movie for getting around it.
And
for not having scene after scene where they show her succumbing to it or giving in, or it just comes up once. There's one line near the end of the movie that tells us this has been going on the whole time. And then it continues.
And then there's that calculus that she does where she's like, he's right. I do need this. I am the kind of not saying it's right that he's doing it, but she's saying, I am the type of person who is playing this game, willing to do these things. Like, I will trade that for this because this is more important. And the movie is basically saying, like, look how fucked up she is, or how much she's been a sacrificial lamb to this system that values what she has to value, that she's putting herself, her personal safety, her personal integrity over these things. Like, the movie is not coy about that. It's not clutching its pearls and being like, how dare he do this? She's like, she hears it and she's like, okay. And then you find out later, like, yeah, one of the reasons why that one scene where she's losing her mind on him over the video that he's bringing her. She's like, this isn't good enough. You know, it's sweeps week, right? Like, you sold me on all this stuff.
Yes.
You made me do a bunch of other stuff. You better bring me the good shit. You know what I mean? And that's like, she's staked a lot on this. And obviously it helps that Russo is obviously the wife of the director and the writer. And she probably had a hand in helping shape her character and all that. But I think it's an incredibly well-written, as you said, like there's an archetype there that we've seen before, but I think she's such an interesting version of that archetype. I think because she's not soulless and I don't know how to describe it really. There's so much, I think there's a lot of warmth to her in a really kind of sick way.
Well, if we could sidebar for just one second to Rene Russo, because right before we started recording, I was rewatching for the first time since the theater In the Line of Fire.
Ooh.
And I forgot what a significant supporting role she has in that movie and what a piece of shit Clint Eastwood is for most of that movie. But she's so good. And this was coming off of Nightcrawler, and I'm not suggesting, hey, she got this part because she sleeps with the director, but like, clearly, he wrote this with her in mind because they are married. And he was like, I'm going to write this great part. And I happen to be married to a great actress.
Great actress, yes.
Can do this part really, really well. Because I was going to ask, I mean, at this budget level, maybe. This is not a big budget movie.
No.
But I was going to say, you know, if she's not married to Dan Gilroy, does Rene Russo get cast in this part? Because Rene Russo parts are further and farther between these days, and movies are lesser for it because Rene Russo is so fucking good at what she does, and what she does is kind of different than what anybody else can do. I mean, you watch something like Tin Cup or Major League or Get Shorty, and what she's so good at.
Get Shorty
is a fucking masterpiece.
Yep.
Is being someone who can call her co-star on their bullshit and still convincingly fall for them.
Mm-hmm.
She's not just this ball buster archetype, because we watched Tin Cup, and like by the end, I don't want to spoil Tin Cup, but
yeah,
Tin Cup is also a fucking amazing movie.
Yes.
Kevin Costner does something that maybe he shouldn't do, and Rene Russo is all in on it. And it's like, she's been calling him on his bullshit the entire movie, and yet she's so excited by, like, he's fucking being himself.
And again, I think in a weird kind of off-putting way that is right aligned with the more with the sort of ethos of the movie, she is turned on by the fact that Lou is her equal in her in their depravity. Like, it's like she's doing the whole push him away, and then gradually he sells himself to her, and it's like, wow, I'm realizing that I'm seeing a lot of myself, or I'm seeing somebody who's brave and bold enough to do these things. And isn't that a great way to craft character? You know, indirectly, and just say, like, oh, she's seeing her mirror there. She's seeing somebody. And like you said, like when Romantic Rivals, when she's playing the girl in a movie, she does it with with an integrity, and she's never like low status. You know, she's always able to maintain that.
Even fucking Lethal Weapon 3, like she comes in and she's Mel Gibson's equal in every way and calls him on his shit, and that still convincingly falls in love with him. Question. This is a legitimate question, and I don't know the answer. Does she, and by she, I'm forgetting her name, Nina, I'm sorry.
Yeah.
Does Nina know when she first encounters Lou, or even in their first few encounters, how depraved she is? Or does she get turned on by Lou unlocking that in her?
I think that she's aware of it.
Okay.
I think that she is.
In my mind, she's convinced herself she's better than him.
Sure. I think there's a way in which when she talks about, and I'm thinking your question made me think of the scene, the opening scene she's got where she talks about, like, think of our newscast as a woman running down the street with a throat cut, like, bring us blood, bring us gore, bring us urban crime seeping into the suburbs and all that. And she's going about, she's rattling it off in kind of like a rote way where she's sort of like, I'm just the producer. This is just content. We just put this out. So maybe you're right. Maybe it is a little bit more of like a, I'm above this. And maybe the conversation they have where he's like, look, you're the midnight news manager on the worst station in town. Like you need me more than I need you, you know? Maybe it is a little bit more of like that. My perspective was she was aware of it, but she was suppressing it because she had grown cynical by like the fact that nobody was really had the same passion for it. And maybe it became a little bit repetitive, but I can easily see that reading as well. That's something that she's like realizing, like, wow, no, this blood, this gore, no one's ever brought me something like this before. I didn't realize how into this I was, or put it this way. I didn't realize somebody like, painted with the same colors, like if it was an artist the way you are,
right?
You know what I mean? Like she hears the music in it the way he does, which is like a fucking gross way to say it, but that's kind of what it
well,
is.
That again, part of the way that I read that last scene, that it, as you say, is it's played like a love scene,
it's like a kiss. Yeah,
it's a moment of self-actualization.
Yes.
Where 100% she realizes, oh, Lou and I are kindred spirits.
Yes. And it's so gross, but it rules. It's so good.
Oh, no, it's fucking awesome.
I mean, I genuinely think you kind of fall in love with these two at the end of the movie, which again is like so horrible. But I love it's it, even though I've seen this movie 1,000 times, even just rewatching it the other day, those moments where you real like, again, not to spoil the whole plot, but like, you know, he gets to the point where he's involved with something, and then he starts to create it, and then you realize the depths to which he's going to go and the things he's going to do, sacrifice innocent lives, sacrifice the life of like police officers. He's going to arrange for crimes to happen so that he gets the footage and all that. The very first time you see him, there's that crash scene or whatever it is where there's the body, and you see him like pull the body across the pavement, and as I said before, the score starts to kind of do this like kind of like major key uptick, like kind of like, oh, it's like optimistic. And then you see him like raise the camera and then stand up on the hill, like on the knoll, and like he puts his arms up and he does the down angle on the scene, and then and the score starts to swell and you're like, he's got it. He knows what to do now. He's nailing it. And you're like, that's a fucking dead body. He's manipulated a crime scene. He is being absolutely disgusting. And like the wonder that the movie plays toward right full force toward the camera. Like this is a wondrous moment of catharsis for this character and achievement. Like we've watched him the whole first act struggle to do this. And now we see him do it and it's beautiful. And you stop this and the movie like will again, not be didactic about it, not yell at you. Like, you know, like again, like Network where we're sitting at the table, listening right. when somebody yells right. at you and says, here's right. why you're bad. It's not to say Network isn't good. Network is wonderful, but this is just a different movie where it's like, you take a second where you lose your breath and you're like, oh my God, I'm rooting for him. Like, ooh.
So there's two scenes that this brings to mind. One is in American History X, a movie I have not revisited in 20 something years, but there's a scene in which the skinheads play a basketball game
right.
with a group of black teenagers, and the way it's shot and cut and scored, it's like a sports movie and you start to root for the skinheads and you're yes. like, wait a second, wait these a are second. Fucking horrible people. Or in Todd Solondz's Happiness, have you seen Happiness?
No, I've never seen that one.
Oh my God. So Dylan Baker is a pedophile who drugs his young son. And by young, I mean 10. His son has a friend sleep over and Dylan Got Baker it. Wants to drug the kid. He puts something in the kid's like tuna sandwich so that the kid will fall asleep and Dylan Baker can rape him. It's literally the worst shit you can think of, right? This is in a movie that's ostensibly a comedy. The way that the scene is put together, you're fucking rooting for the kid to eat the sandwich. And it is a miracle of cinema because Dylan Baker is just watching attentively as the kid almost takes a bite, puts it down, and we in the audience are like, fucking eat the sandwich, kid. And we know what that means. And then we have to fucking pull ourselves back and be like, wait, no, we don't want this. And it's Jake Gyllenhaal with the camera. It's like, look what he's doing. He's got it. Yay, our hero. And then you're like, oh, wait a second. I'm a horrible person
right.
for siding with this. It's this. I mean, it's such an achievement of the movies to get that kind of audience identification. And again, as long as you recognize like, oh, I'm being manipulated, you could give yourself over to that manipulation and it's okay because you don't really side with the pedophile who wants to rape a kid and you don't really side with Lou Bloom who's willing to let people die in the service of his career. But for the sake of a movie, like it's okay to go along with it.
You genuinely hope he gets the shot. You
right.
genuinely hope he gets the footage. You genuinely hope that things go the way he's because he's worked hard for it. Again, we go back to this idea of like this quiet, cynical indictment of like American ideals or big business ideals. And look, and I'm also like, you know, again, thinking about the tenacity of the business pamphlet, you know, the business seminar, he talks very openly about like, I spend most of my time online reading these business things and taking these business courses. And I'm also a big, I don't know how to say this. I also participate in like fitness and wellness culture a lot. And there's a lot of that same kind of preachy sort of you live your truth, you do you kind of shit out there when it comes to like self, like wellness and like a win, like, you know, a lot of it is self-aggrandizing. A lot of it is like quietly kind of toxic and disgusting and kind of like selfish. And like, there's a lot of shit about it that I kind of take and I go, okay, I'm going to put that over there and ignore it. And I'm going to, you know, like there's a lot about it that's like culty and stuff like that. And I'm fully aware of that. And I make a conscious effort every day to like kind of focus on like, no, like I'm going to ignore that, you know, sort of follow your journey, live your truth shit that is really kind of just about selling supplements and sort of focus more on what this does for me.
Right.
But you see how quickly you can get sucked into that the way he does, because it's so empowering. It's so like, yes, like there is a sort of holistic, sort of crunchy kind of solution to my problems and it will be this and it's empowering and like all that. And you really, really understand, again, the movie doesn't have to tell you you're fucking guilty. It does it through cinema.
Right.
It does it through the things you say. It's the tuna sandwich. It's like, it's like you celebrate him because you want to be like him because you want, you know, and it's like the movie doesn't have to tell you that stuff. And that's what I think when I say the movie is like kind of blunt and obvious, but also really elegant. That's exactly what I mean. It does such a great job of that stuff. And that's, it's it's just, it's power. It's amazing.
So I need to sidebar again real quick because of what you were just talking about with the health and wellness culture. And I'm somebody who's like, I already have like 4 gigs, but I'm currently trying to find a 5th gig because we need money. And I'm not good at selling myself. And so watching Lou Bloom, I'm all automatically repulsed. Right. And so much of what we need to do is to sell ourselves, and we're constantly being sold this idea of community. When you were talking about health and wellness culture, it's like belong to this community, be part of this community, wear a community, buy these supplements. And when I hear that word community, I have to admit, part of me feels a sense of, I don't want to say shame. Maybe I'm revealing too much on this Nightcrawler episode, but because we at F This Movie talk so much about our community, right? And I don't think I'm the one who like started that in terms of like identifying it as a community, calling it a community. Maybe I did. I don't know. I don't feel like I'm trying to sell the idea of a community. I hope that it has come about organically and that the people in it are the ones who recognize, oh, this is what we have.
That being said, $5 a month Patreon, if you
well, that's the thing, because for the longest time I was like, but it's okay because we're giving away our show for free, we're giving away our website for free. I'm not selling anything, so I'm not saying belong to our community, I have something to sell you. But now we have this Patreon, and I do feel like guilt and shame about it.
Let me say this. One, as somebody who was a fan of this community before I became part of it, I can tell you, you're not selling anything. It has come about organically. One of the reasons why I even wrote you that first email years ago was because I was like, you know what? These people are, they're good friends, and this is a really good supportive environment. And it's a way that's very different than a lot of the other sort of quote unquote communities out there that are sort of very gatekeepy and judgmental. And I don't have to tell anybody listening that there's all kinds of reasons why you should want to be a part of our community. I'll use that word. And two, we fucking work hard, Patrick. This is hard.
Yes.
Even doing this right now, I recorded reserve seating right before this. I'm going to edit it tomorrow night. Like Adam, everybody, we work hard on this. And it's lovely to give it away for free. It's also nice though to, you know, speaking of health and wellness culture, you know, you're worth something. We are putting out a quality product, and sometimes it's like, hey, you know, maybe it deserves a little bit of something to keep it going. Again, that's me being a maybe cynical Lou Bloom about it. But again, as somebody who, again, much of the same vein you are, which is like, I do feel sometimes like you shouldn't have to do that, but you do. That's the way it is. You do have to kind of sell yourself sometimes. And certainly don't think you should feel guilty about the Patreon at all. Again, $5 a month if you want some bonus content. Check it out.
Basically covers the cost of Zoom so that we can record these shows while seeing at each other. Because I recently tried to listen to like a Skype show, and I was like, oh, the audio levels keep dropping in and out. It's a mess.
Well, and I can also tell you, as somebody who's been doing the podcast remotely for, I don't know, a fucking decade now, whatever.
Yeah, right.
It's so much better to sit here and be able to look at you because
it's way better. Personal question, and then we'll get back to Nightcrawler.
Like a 32. It depends on what I've eaten.
Because just recently I was like linking to a review. It might have been Arrival, and Arrival was like one of your early reviews. Yes.
Yeah, 2016 is when I came.
Yeah,
So why aren't you as good a writer as you were then? Is that
not at all? You continue to improve with every review. Somebody just today was commenting on your Dune 2 review that it's one of your best.
Thank you.
Has being a part of F This Movie worked out the way you hoped? Not to put you on the spot while we're recording a podcast, but I saw that and I was like, oh my gosh, Rob has been with us for 8 fucking years. I wonder if this is like what he hoped for, or has it been the whole thing a crushing
it's
and
really
futile
just
disappointment?
Been, it's mostly just been a noose around my neck. I can't tell you how much.
Oh, believe me, I get it.
This is typically the kind of thing that you and I text each other at 2 a.m. So it's kind of weird to talk about this on the air, but no.
Should we save this for the Patreon?
No, yeah, it's
$5 a month, everybody.
It's been more than I could ever have hoped for. I again, not to reveal too much, but for folks who've been following the site for a long time, you guys know I came about, you know, a little while back, and I was in a very, very down, dark place in my life, and I was looking for something to focus my energy, and I had this thing that I had been doing for a little while, and I thought I had done this small blog for a little while, and I was like, you know what, I think I'm ready for this, and I sent you my portfolio, and I was just like, I think this is good. I don't know, maybe if you're looking for another writer, and you wrote me back like right away, and it obviously it's built from there, and I've been able to join critics associations and groups now. I've been able to get my, you know, I've been able to do TV stuff, and this is, you know, now I teach film, and so this has been more than anything in terms of that, but more importantly, Patrick, you guys are among my best friends, and this community that you're talking about, you know, it means the world to me. I don't want to get too I don't want to get too
no, we don't have to
broken up on Maine about it, but no, I mean, I love you, Patrick. I love everybody here at this movie. Some of you guys in the comments, I feel like, are a little no, this has been this I and to take it back outside of the emotional stuff, aside of the, like, the fact that, again, you guys are friends, family, so on and so forth. Writing every week and having the incentive to write and produce stuff every week has made me a better writer, has
sure.
focused me. When I talk to people about writing, and I actually, it's so funny to bring this back to Nightcore, because I have in my notes, I said, this is actually kind of creepy to look at as somebody who is also has a portfolio that they constantly have to add to and sell. Actually, I have another critics group application coming up in about a month that I have to put stuff together for. So it's kind of like, oh, I have to assemble all my stuff together. It really does. It focuses.
That's
me.
The
really,
Galactic Film Critics
that's
Association.
The Galactic,
yes.
Yeah.
Okay.
That's the Imperium. I'm applying to be Christopher Walken's personal film. Yeah. The Imperial, the Quisac, cinema. Anyway,
the spice,
the spice up his ass.
The sleeper has awakened.
I hope we get more Walken in the next one. no, but anyway, to sum all this up, it has worked out better than I could have ever imagined, for a number of personal and professional reasons. How about
well,
you?
We're so lucky to have you, and I'm so lucky that you sent me that email, and right away I knew, like, what an amazing fit you are, and what a good friend you are. And I, it's weird that we're doing this on the podcast, but
That's okay.
I realized, like, so much of our F This Movie related correspondence just comes down to, like, feeding the beast and, like, mm-hmm. Oh, I'm going to have this review for you then. And okay, great. And I'm not good at checking in. Like, are you happy here? You know?
Oh.
And so I just wanted to check in while we recorded and broadcast.
Guys, we're not fucking around. This is genuinely, like, I think Patrick and I are both kind of getting a little bit like, are we gonna hug? Can we hug? Like,
let's hug. It's why we have Zoom.
Give you a big hug. Yeah. No. Yeah. This is I did not expect to be going down this avenue. I apologize.
Well, it makes sense on the Nightcrawler episode, because this is a movie about sociopaths.
How about this? Let's promise to everybody listening that you and I will check in with each other
okay.
more about stuff that's not related to our work.
Okay.
How about that?
Sounds good.
Okay.
Sounds good.
Cool.
I used to be, to go off something that you said about, like, becoming a better writer because you're sort of forced to flex that muscle every week. We used to run two pieces a day, and it almost killed me. And we backed off, and there are some weeks now where I don't write because you have a review and Adam has something, and then we have a podcast and then reserve seating, and then Anthony has a piece. And I don't have to write anything. And I've become a worse writer in the process. And I need to get back to, because I read your shit and I'm just like, oh, I could never write this ever.
That's not true. You know that.
It's 100% true. But
I appreciate that. But come on.
I need to get back to working that muscle more.
I will say this. As somebody, again, who was following the site long before I was a part of it, when I see you writing something, I am excited to read it. I am excited when I say, because I see like, oh, Patrick wrote something, like, which is, again, as you said, doesn't always happen every week.
Right.
It's like, oh,
right.
Like, I mean, you do, like, obviously you do your stuff with Adam and all that. And like, you know, you'll do like the director essentials and stuff, but sometimes you'll put out something and I'll be like, oh, that's like just a solid piece that Patrick wrote about something. I can't wait to read it. So I want to, I missed reading your writing as well. You were, again, one of the reasons why I wanted to come aboard was because you were one of the writers that I just connected with the most. And boy, you know, for a conversation that started off with like, are we cynical about our community? It really did just turn into you and me blowing each other, which is fine, because that's
which
what we've
you
doing.
Can get on the Patreon. People are going to subscribe just for that, because Rob's very handsome, everyone. And
I
you
mean,
really want to see him suck a dick.
It's so hard to maintain. I hope you all appreciate it, because it's a fucking pain in the ass. But anyway, yes, I think I'm always happy when I see that you've written something. So I hope that you continue to flex that muscle. As you say.
I hope so, too.
I'm very excited to go and read that comment.
There, baby.
Thank you for a person.
As
who wrote
we
comment.
Record, it's like the top comment on our site, just so
Hell
you know.
Oh, yeah. Look at that. Thank you, Todd.
Todd?
It was Todd who wrote it. Todd said that it was a good review. So thank you, Todd.
It's nice for anybody to comment ever, you know, and fewer people do now because of Blogger, and it's become almost impossible to comment. So we don't get a ton of feedback anymore. And sometimes when we do, it's like shitty feedback. So positive feedback keeps us going. You know,
we've had this conversation, and Adam and I especially have had this conversation, because reserve seating is a lot. It's a lot.
Sure.
I mean, and we love doing it, honestly, but like, it's a lot. It's a lot of work. Sometimes we're watching two or three movies. I'm editing it. Adam's putting together these great ideas. Again, Adam is the idea guy. I pull my weight in reserve seating by editing the episodes. That's how I pull my weight. It's all Adam's brainchild. And it takes a lot of work. And and sometimes it's like, you put it out there and it's like, nobody, well, did anybody watch it? Did anybody like it? And we decided a long time ago, we've had this conversation where it's like, we do it for us. Like, we do it for us. That's what we do it for. We do what we like, and then we'll never have that, like, oh, is anybody watching thing? Like, and we appreciate everybody who watches. Like, again, I'm not saying that we don't care if you watch or not, but in order to churn it out the way that we do, you have to love doing it for each other. Like, it's like, we just kind of support each other with that.
Literally the F This Movie mission statement since day one. And it's why I've never gotten into the weeds about how many people are listening.
Right.
How many hits did we get? It's why we've never run an article about what order you should watch the Austin Powers movie in. Because that's a real article that exists, by the way. What order should you watch the Austin Powers movies in? Because my feeling has always just been, no. Make a site that you would want to read, and then you'll want to keep doing it, you know? And the fact that people read it, and the fact that people interact with us on social media or on the site or wherever, is such a bonus. And it has given me a reason to keep going, because there are weeks where I'm like, I don't feel up to running F This Movie Fest this year.
Yeah.
And then I see all these people are looking forward to it. And I'm like, well, I want to do it for everybody else. And then I, like, do it, and it's fun, and it will get me through another year.
Yeah. And again, not to put too much out there in front of everybody, but like, we've had conversations where it's like, do we even want to keep doing this? Like, are we done? Or are we going to, and then it's like, we always find something that keeps us going. So that's always good. Can I give you some foreign language titles of Nightcrawler?
I forgot this was going to close
out the show.
Yeah, please.
Unless we have a lot more to talk about Nightcrawler.
No.
Okay. So some of them are fairly conventional, right? Some of them are, for example, in Latvia, the film is called Night Reporter, which
makes sense.
Yeah.
A professional news gathering service.
In France, it's called Night Call, which is like, okay.
Doesn't make a ton of sense, but.
No, but neither do the French.
Sounds a lot more erotic. Hey,
yeah.
Easy. You're a fucking Jean-Pierre Melville expert now, so you don't need to be bagging on the French.
That man had so many keys.
In comedy, we call that a callback.
Hey, check it out. Go back and re-listen to this whole episode, which is like tangentially about Nightcrawler.
Mostly Dune 2 and ourselves.
And ourselves. In Poland, it's called a freelancer. Informative.
Okay. He is.
Now we start to get a little funky. Now we get to if this was one of your marathons, we'd be getting into the overnights now.
Okay, nice.
In Latin America, the film is called Deadly Scoop.
Deadly Scoop is pretty good. It sounds like an erotic thriller set in
well,
an ice cream parlor.
Speaking of erotic thriller, in Croatia, the film is called Night Chronicles.
Interesting. I like it. Shannon Tweed made at least three of those. Remember when I was going to watch all her movies? That didn't happen. But it was a good idea.
Three more for you, and they're going to build. In Latin America, oh no, we did Latin America. Right?
Yeah.
Okay. In Brazil, it's called The Vulture.
All right.
Two more. Azerbaijan, the film is called He Built the Night.
Interesting.
Which is cool. I would watch, that sounds like a, like,
that's
I would
a
watch that movie.
Timo Jahanto action movie,
yes.
If ever I've heard one.
And the crowning achievement, the reason I'm even reading these to begin with,
yeah,
is in the Czech Republic.
Uh-huh.
This film is called He Was Snooping.
Hey, what's that guy doing? He was snooping.
He was snooping. I like that it's he was snooping. Past tense.
He was
snooping.
He
is snooping. Or
yeah.
The snooper.
No.
What happened to him? He was snooping.
He was snooping.
Mm-hmm.
When you texted me that you had these other titles, I texted you back Mr. Cat Poop, because that is maybe the title in Japan of As Good As It Gets.
As Good As It Gets, right. Yeah, I knew. I had to Google it, but I did remember looking at
and
it.
And I learned that, and that's the first thing that comes to my mind. Every time somebody talks about an alternate title, my brain goes right to Mr. Cat Poop.
Well,
every
now
time.
it's going to be He Was Snooping.
Mr. Cat Poop was snooping.
Yeah, Mr. Cat Poop was snooping.
Pooping and snooping.
Pooping and snooping. Should I rewatch that movie? Is that a good
As Good As
movie?
It Gets?
Yeah.
I love Jack Nicholson.
Sure.
Like, I love Jack Nicholson.
Sure.
But I'm scared to rewatch that movie because it is some
those
90s sitcom bullshit.
Let us know in the comments if we should rewatch As Good As It Gets.
Oh, there was another fucking Twister movie. That was a preview before Dune 2.
Yeah.
Sorry, I thought of Helen Hunt, and then I thought of Twister, and then I thought of Twisters.
Made by the Minari director.
I can't. Maybe it's great, but I'm not somebody who really likes Twister, so...
Yeah. Hey, second reference tonight, not to spoil anything for reserve seating, but and I won't even spoil who said it, but one of our guests on reserve seating this week also expressed a dislike for Twister.
Interesting.
2 days in a row on the site of Twister hate coming at you.
Yeah. Well, that we've alienated anybody who's left, because Twister is a very popular movie.
And Spotify as well. Spotify, the Spotify folks are huge fans of Twister. They're not.
They were ready to take us back. They were like, all they have to do is apologize. And then we started talking shit about Twister.
Real quick, I feel like we would both be bummed out if we finished this, speaking of which, if we did not mention Bill Paxton in Nightcrawler.
Yes.
Just
made me sad.
Made me sad. Good performance. Yeah. Love to see him. Like when he plays a scumbag.
He's great at it. And not... Yes. Super broad in this movie, because we just recently JB and I did a show on True Lies, and I know his performance in that movie is beloved. I think he does exactly what the movie has asked of him in that movie. I just think that whole subplot, his character, it's written a little broadly. He plays it that way. Nothing against him or his performance, but I like him in this mode better.
Sure.
It's a little more subtle and realistic, and he's not just
pissing
his pants and stuff.
He's like strutting a little bit. Like, he feels comfy. You know what I mean? Like he feels comfy in this movie, which is cool. Maybe that was like the budget or whatever, but I just love to see it. Miss him.
Yeah. Yeah. It made me want to revisit One False Move, oddly enough.
Ooh. What was
which is some fucking great Paxton.
Yeah. Ooh.
Maybe his best.
Maybe Paxton's best.
Yeah.
Let's see. I have Paxton gaps. Oh, you know what reminded me that I have Paxton gaps is I have the Red Letter Media boys did. They just did a video on what's the horror movie he's in by the Detroit Rock City
Frailty?
Guy?
Oh, the Rifkin Dark Backward.
The Dark Backward, yes. Yeah. They just did a video on the Dark Backward. And I thought, I'd never seen the Dark Backward. And look at Paxton being crazy in that movie. I want to see that. So
it's very weird and very broad.
Yeah.
Frailty Rules.
Frailty, I have seen.
I need to revisit it, but yes. One False Move is going to come first.
Yeah.
Do you have those? I don't remember who put them out. I don't think it was Indicator. Imprint put out two boxes of neo-noir.
I don't have them. I know what you're talking about, though.
Okay. One False Move is in there, as is a movie that is going to be coming up on a reserve seating.
Ooh.
Yeah.
Oh, yes.
Little tease.
Little tease. Ooh, for next week. Yeah.
Yeah.
That's right. Speaking of which, we have three movies to watch for reserve seating next week.
God damn it.
Folks.
I just watched one of them, so I only have two to rewatch. But
I got three movies to watch for reserve seating next week.
Well, wait till we stop recording, and I'll tell you what I'm up to.
Okay.
Thank you, Rob, for talking about Nightcrawler and all that personal shit.
Everything else, yes.
I did not mean to put you on the spot, but I appreciate being so vulnerable, as they say on reality
just
TV.
You, buddy. Just you.
Thank you. Thank you to everybody who listens. Thank you to everybody who supports the Patreon. Thanks to everybody who comments. Thanks to the guy who said the nice thing about Rob's review, because it's a great fucking review. Todd. Thank you to just everybody in general. Thank you to Erica for letting me devote so much of my fucking life to this website.
Sure.
Understanding all the time that it takes me away. And thanks to Dan Gilroy for making Nightcrawler, and Jake Gyllenhaal for being such a fucking weirdo. Stop yelling at Rebecca Ferguson. She's royalty.
She is. And she's a witch, and she's going to get inside your mind with her crazy little baby.
Thanks for listening to FS Movie.